I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, we are back for another episode of the Functional Nerds. I don't know if you saw it today, but over on the Facebook page, I actually posted a video of the spider check, which is what I do prior to recording because my recording is in the basement and there are basement spiders.
Oh, I didn't see that this morning, actually. I will have to check it out later, but I've seen you post pictures of the spiders in your basement, which are horrifying. So there you go. Well, yeah. I hope you had a clean spider check this morning.
It was a clean spider check.
That's good. That's good. Today, Patrick, we are joined by L. Catherine White. She's got a new book out called Flamebringer, and it is the final installment in her series. Elle, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Ken, you know, before we get into anything else, and I feel like just from our pre-show talk, we're going to have a lot to talk about today, and we'll go into many directions. So just so we don't forget to mention the book and the series, maybe you can give our listeners a little snapshot of what the series is about, and particularly what the new book is about.
Yeah, absolutely. So Flamebringer is the third in the Heartstone series, which the first book, Heartstone, started answering the question, what would Pride and Prejudice look like in a fantasy world where Mr. Darcy is a dragon-riding monster hunter? Because I really wanted the answer to that question and wasn't able to find a book that that rendered it well. So I was like, well, I'm going to write it myself. So the first book follows the Pride and Prejudice storyline pretty closely, but in a fantasy world with dragons and monsters and battles and, you know, all that fun stuff. The second book goes from there with those characters in that world and goes into its own story, essentially, exploring what the happily ever after would look like in a world with all of the craziness going on. And Flamebringer is the conclusion of that story where our two main characters, our Darcy and Elizabeth characters, have to fight a big bad to save the kingdom and face lots of other monsters on the way.
Well, that's, excuse me, that sounds great. How has your experience been putting these books out into the world? What's been fan reaction? Have you gone to cons and met people who've read your books? How's all that been going?
It's been really fun. I like to think of it when Heartstone first came out on release day. I thought it felt a lot like, I don't have any kids, but I imagine it's like having a baby and then sending it off to college in the same day. Because it was this culmination of, you know, many, many months of editing and, the ups and downs and highs and lows of all of that crazy process. And then letting it go into the world and letting it become its own thing and having people, I think it was Joss Whedon that said, a creative work is, it's not a static thing. It's something, it's like a teenager. It grows up and it talks back to you. And when it's in the hands of fans and readers, it's really what it does. And it becomes their own thing instead of just your own thing. And I've loved that experience, just listening to people that have enjoyed it, that have said, hey, this is something that we've also wanted, you know, a Pride and Prejudice fantasy remix as well. So connecting with that community of people has always been super, super fun.
With the feedback that you've gotten from readers and fans, has that influenced what you may or may not write next?
Yeah, it definitely has. So the first book, Heartstone, was a very faithful retelling of Pride and Prejudice. It follows the storyline pretty closely, almost beat for beat. And even though the characters do branch out eventually, and then in the second book, it becomes really its own story. It's the story's original, the world continues to build. And it's been interesting hearing the readers that have either wanted it to be more close to the original material or to diverge more. There's definitely been a split. They say, oh, no, want it more faithful, or no, do more original stuff. So finding that balance has been fun. And I did enjoy writing a adaptation of a story that is very near and dear to my heart. I love Pride and Prejudice, but it was also tremendously fun to branch out and be more original. And I think I would enjoy doing another reimagining of a classic story, provided it's one that I know well and love as much as Pride and Prejudice, but it would, I don't think it would be as close, follow as closely the story as Heartstone did, because I want to throw some surprises for readers in there.
As you were describing it, I was thinking about, I'm going to blank on the author's name. I think it's Seth Graham. He did the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and he did the, I think he also did the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, but both of which were made into movies, which I've never, I haven't seen either of them, but I was thinking about those. Were those not influential, but did those books kind of being out in the world have any impact on deciding to write something like this?
I did read the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and it was much different than I expected, to be honest, because he took the actual, like, it was the script of Pride and Prejudice, and then added some scenes and tweaked some things to make it work for the zombie storyline, which was very fun and not something that I'd ever encountered before in a book or any adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. So that did influence my thinking of, hey, this is something that was able to be published, so people are interested in this sort of thing, so why not go similar but not quite that direction, and kind of just went from there.
Well, sometimes, you know, with any sort of human endeavor, if somebody is out there showing that something can be done, it makes it more likely that other people may do it too. You know, the example that I always think about is the 4-minute mile. That was something that was considered, oh, no one can ever break that, you know, it can't be done. Of course, once, I guess it's Roger Bannister, I think, is the first person to have broken the 4-minute mile. Once one person did it, two other people did it within, you know, a couple of months of that, because they're just like, well, they can do it, so we can do it too. So there is sort of a validation that comes from seeing somebody do something. It sort of opens up your mind, like, oh, we can do that. Absolutely. So yeah, so that's great. Well, I'm happy that you're out there writing these books, and I'm glad that you're interacting with the fan base and having success. So that's great. Before we get on to our next segment, I want to thank everybody who backs us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We love doing the show, and having your support makes all the difference in the world. So we want to thank all the people that are backing us there. And if you like the show and would like to become a backer, just go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, and you can back us for $1 a month or a couple dollars a month or whatever works for you. You'll get access to our patrons only Facebook page, where Patrick posts a lot and I post a little bit, and we do lots of fun stuff over there. So check it out, patreon.com/functionalnerds. Now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And speaking of our patrons over at patreon.com, we do have that Facebook page, and I have been posting there asking our patrons to put their picks of the week in. So here's a couple of our patrons and their picks of the week. First up is Joseph Hootman, who picks, I never pronounced this right. Is it Gendy or Gendy Tartakovsky? I know he did like the Clone Wars. He's an animated guy. I'm going to say Gendy, but it could be Gendy. He has something called Primal, and that's a beautiful, shockingly brutal, dialogue-free 5-episode animated series about a caveman and a dinosaur. So that is Joseph Hootman's pick. Robert Junker picks Stumptown, which is adapted from the Greg Rucka comic. And Stace Johnson picked Ted Chiang's Exhalation, a collection of new and reprinted short stories. So those are our picks of the week from Joseph Hootman, Robert Junker, and Stace Johnson. Thanks to you for contributing. Elle, what is your pick this week?
My pick this week is a book by Marina, and I hope I get the pronunciation right, Marina and Sergei Diachenko, translated by Julia Hersey, called Vita Nostra. It came out earlier this year from Harper Voyager, and it is it's kind of hard to sum up quickly, but I think the best pitch would be a very dark, very Russian, metaphysical, slightly urban fantasy, slightly magical realist, anti-Harry Potter. It is a fascinating look into a school that teaches something. We're not entirely sure if it's magic or something else. And it follows a student that is coerced into attending this academy and slowly learns how to not be human anymore. It's dark, it's weird, it's wonderful. So I would heartily recommend Vita Nostra by Marina and Sergei Diachenko.
Are they a married couple?
They are, yep. They are, I think they just, this was their, they've had several several big fantasy novels in Russian. I believe this is their first, I'm going to get this wrong, but I believe this is their first English translation of one of their novels. But they had another one that just recently came out that's kind of a sequel. I haven't read it yet, but I'm very excited to.
Awesome. That sounds great. Patrick, what's your pick this week?
I'm torn because there's so many different things and so many cool stuff happening right now. I'm going to go with something that I don't think I've talked that much about on the show, which is the new series from CW, Batwoman.
Oh, no, I know you were anticipating it, but I have not spoken about it really yet.
I'm very much enjoying it. I think it's a great show. Ruby Rose, I think she started out very stiff and almost uncomfortable, but she's loosening up and I think she's actually getting into the character more and more as the weeks go on. I know that she also early on got hurt doing her own stunts. So that might be part of why she was kind of so stiff. But I just feel like they are really having a lot of fun and are building this world. And, you know, they didn't even like mess around. Normally a CW show would take an entire season to kind of reveal some big mystery or, you know, whatever that's kind of going on, you know, like Oliver trying to figure out the whole list thing and with his dad and all that kind of crap and Barry and Kara. But anyway, so, you know, they always do these season-long arcs with some sort of mystery. They are kind of doing that, but they started it out by going, here's the world, it's kind of fucked up, let's go from there. And I'm specifically not spoiling things, but I'm loving the way that Ruby Rose is playing the character. I love the way they're kind of building this world of Batwoman and Kate Kane. And I'm loving the villain, which is Alice and the Wonderland gang.
Now, does this take, I don't know if this is a spoiler, does this take place in Gotham?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, so they introduced Gotham and Batwoman in the Crisis crossover from last year.
Right.
And at that point she was more established. And what they've done with the series is they've gone back to the beginning and they're slowly building it up and she's getting, you know, like she discovers the Batcave, she discovers Batman, his stuff. She starts to change the costume and become Batwoman over the course of several episodes. And I think they're catching up to the Arrow timeline.
Okay.
Because, you know, Crisis is coming.
Right.
Which is the other big thing that I would love to talk about at some point, which is just Arrow is blowing it out of the water. I'm just blown away by Arrow this year. But, you know, they're trying to catch up, I think, to the point where they can do the crossover this year, which is coming very, very quickly because she's going to be part of that. So, yeah, they're just doing a great job. I'm loving the character. I'm loving just everything they're doing with it right now. It's just it's a breath of fresh air, I think, into the Arrowverse.
Let me ask you this. As you know, I'm way behind on the CW stuff. I didn't even watch last year's episode. I watched like the first half of Legends and haven't gotten into any of those. So there's like a whole season of Flash and Arrow and Supergirl that I have not gotten to yet, that is not high on my priorities list right now. Is it worthwhile to watch the crossover from last year without watching the stuff preceding it? Or is that kind of foolish? Do you really need the setup of the first 6 episodes of each season to really even understand what's going on?
I think you can watch the crossover by itself, because they tend to do that where they're kind of encapsulated.
Yeah, I might try that, because in addition to watching those episodes of Legends, I started watching the first episode of Flash, and like, it didn't grab me, so I didn't continue. But maybe if I watch the crossover, that might be fun. Cause I don't know, I put a lot of time into these shows. I watched everything up until last season, but it's so much to keep up with. And, with the CW shows, they tend to have their ups and downs, and some seasons are better than others. And, you know, I'm probably not the only person that has this opinion, and I've shared it times before, but it's like, I think there are too many episodes per season. I'd love to see them condense it, but I know that'll never happen, because that's not the way the model of the CW works. It's, we have 22 episodes. Correct. And that's how it's going to be. But I do like the characters, and I do think there is good writing in there. I just wish it was a little more compressed, but maybe I'll try to watch the crossover from last year and see if that grabs me enough to kind of get back into it. But
that leads into Crisis.
Right.
So that definitely leads into Crisis. I will also throw out there that Batwoman right now is standalone.
Okay.
Really? I mean, there hasn't been any Arrowverse crossover moments. It's all been about setting up Gotham as it is today and Kate Kane. Now I'm curious, Elle, are you into any of these shows? Do you watch any of the CW stuff?
Unfortunately, I do not have TV, so I have been
woefully
behind in a lot of my TV watching, but I think I now have some new stuff to add to my TV watch list.
Just go watch the damn show. It's really, really good. I'm so into this show. It's great. I'm loving it. I absolutely am loving it.
Elle, because we talk about it a lot on this show, when you say you don't have TV, do you mean?
Here we go.
Have you
cord cut?
No. Well, yeah, that's what I'm going to ask. So do you mean you physically, like, when you say that, do you mean you don't have cable, or you do not actually have a television to watch anything on? Like, if so, do you watch things like on your computer? Like, do you have Netflix or any of that? Or do you just not watch anything on a screen, which is totally cool too? I'm just curious.
That is a good point. I haven't gone quite that far. I do have a TV. It is very old, very beat up, and is not connected to cable or pretty much anything. I do have Netflix though, and all the streaming stuff. So I do watch those occasionally. It's just hard to find the time. I want to binge them all.
The CW shows are on Netflix.
Yeah, they're all on Netflix. Yeah,
all of them. Really? Yeah. Oh boy. Well, there goes my weekend.
The other one I love is Black Lightning. So Black Lightning, I think there's 2-3 seasons on Netflix now.
Oh boy. Mm. Yeah, Netflix is.
And I love that.
Netflix
one.
is coming out with some things I am very excited for in the next couple months. So I think I'm going to have to set aside a.
Witcher?
Yes!
Yeah, when is the...
The Witcher, December 20th.
I can't wait.
So excited.
So excited. I love those books.
Yes.
I am loving those books.
That was the other thing that I was debating throwing in as my pick of the week. Anything Andrzej Sapkowski, because, Witcher. So much Witcher.
Let's table
John's
that.
Wait.
No, let's because I think that's a good thing to get into too. I'll quickly do my pick here. I've been reading a lot again lately. My reading had slowed down because I was reading like an 850-page nonfiction book that took me like 2 months to get through. So I've been knocking a bunch of books out in the last 3 weeks because they've been shorter books. So I have a couple that I'm interested to pick, but I'm going to pick the one that I think is most relevant to our listeners. And that is Creative Quest. And I listened to the audiobook, and the author is Amir Questlove Thompson. You may know him as the drummer from The Roots and the drummer/bandleader on the Jimmy Fallon Show. So he's written several books at this point. I believe this is his most recent one. And it is a book about creativity and the creative process. I listened to the audiobook, which he does himself. Now, most of the examples are music-based, but it is more conceptual, and I think a lot of the ideas in it apply to all sorts of different aspects of creativity. And he actually is very into cooking and chefs and things. So there's some examples of cooking and these kind of world-class chefs that pops up in there. Like I said, some music, some writing. So it's a very enjoyable audiobook to listen to because he's a very likable kind of character in terms of like how he presents his book. And there's some good ideas in there. So if you have an Audible subscription and you're looking for something a little different, I think this is kind of a nice one to listen to. And you might get a couple of ideas for your creative process. So once again, it's called Creative Quest and it's by Amir Questlove Thompson, drummer of The Roots and The Jimmy Fallon Show. So that is my pick this week. So let's talk Witcher a little bit. I know I've seen Patrick post about it. Now, Patrick, how many of the books have you read at this point? Because I know you started reading them a couple months back.
I am close to the end of book three.
Okay.
So and the books are the first two are actually short story collections, I think.
Right.
No, wait. The first one is a short story collection. And then you get Sword of Destiny, which I think is also short story collection. Yep. And then you go into Sea of Storms, I think, which is the first quote unquote real standalone novel. Is that correct? I think that's correct. So I'm close to the end of Sea of Storms.
Nice. And Elle, have you read all of those books?
I have read the majority of them. I have not read Sea of Storms or I'm working my way through Sword of Destiny. I've probably three-fourths of the way, but all of the rest of them I have read.
Now, are these books that must be read in order, or are these books that can be read out of order?
Core books that are like the actual novels, they should be read in order, but the short story collections, you kind of skip around. Some of them are more vignettes that touch at different places in the Witcher story. So they're all good background, but you can, you can be a little loose with the timeline.
Yeah.
What I read based on some descriptions of the Netflix series is that you definitely want to get through Sword of Destiny. Because a lot of that is going to be part of, or at least some of that is going to be background and some of the same characters are going to be in this Witcher show.
I was actually, as I was watching the trailer for The Witcher, I saw exactly where I was in the short story that I was reading. I was like, well, hey, that looks familiar. And so I'm super motivated to finish it.
I think I even read something about Dandelion's going to make an appearance.
Yes, Dandelion.
That's awesome.
I've been thinking about that because it's certainly something that I'm interested in. I'm sure I'll watch it, but I haven't read the books yet. And I'm at that point of thinking about it is now, will I enjoy the show more because I haven't read it or should I read it first? And what are your thoughts of that in terms of movies or series based on books, do you prefer having read the book first? Do you like kind of going in fresh and not knowing anything about the story? What's your thoughts, experiences with that kind of thing?
That is a good question. It definitely, for this series in particular, it would definitely provide a richer experience to have read the books just because the political intrigue and the world building is nearly exhaustive in the books. And it really provides a background. So, you see a character for 10 seconds on the screen, but then reading the books, you have all of this background information on them. And I like that as a fantasy writer, as a world builder, that's kind of my jam. But certainly if it's a well-produced series, you could enjoy it just as much without it. I guess it depends on their many books, so it depends on how long you can dedicate to developing your world building background.
I know,
John. Can I put this in the context for you?
Please do.
So, do you remember us talking about Rogue One?
Yes.
And how I thought there was some really stupid stuff in that movie. Like there was some things that just didn't mean anything to me. And you're like, oh my God, but if you'd read this book, and if you'd read that book, then this would mean so much more to you. And this would be, I think it's going to be like that.
Well, then I'll read them because I like that. It's personally, I don't think I've ever read a book, then watched a series, and felt like reading the book detracted from the experience. I almost always feel like, it, as Elle put it, that it enriches the experience. And in the case of Rogue One, that is one where I think typically there hasn't been as much, when we're talking about Star Wars, you know, that much of a carryover from the new books into the new movies, except for that one. James Luceno's Labyrinth is that the name of it? Oh, Catalyst. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of another James Luceno book. Catalyst. That's the name of the book that he wrote. That is sort of the prequel for that, for Rogue One. That makes Rogue One such a much better watching experience. Cause I remember even that first scene in Rogue One, I just remember thinking in the movies, I'm like, if you didn't read this book, you don't really know what's going on here, or it's not going to mean very much. So that's a case where the book did help quite a bit. So I do like that. I've never been like, oh, I wish I didn't read the book, cause that spoiled the surprise. I don't think I care about surprises so much. I think I always feel with surprises, if that's the big draw of what you're doing, that's kind of not enough. I'm not saying that's bad. It can be a nice feature of storytelling, but I think the execution of the storytelling and the quality of the storytelling shouldn't be dependent on a reveal or a surprise necessarily.
I agree with Elle. I think it's just going to enhance the experience.
So how many books are there? So if I was to, you said, Patrick, to get up to, what is it? Storm of Destiny. Is that the
Sword of Destiny?
Sword of Destiny. How many?
That's two books.
So how many books are there if I read to catch up to the series? How many would that be then?
There's two books.
Oh, there's only two.
Just read the first. You read the first two story, the short story collections, and I forget what the first one's called. But the second one is the Sword of Destiny. When you get through that, I think you're primed.
Okay. Well, then that's easy enough. I will do it then.
You could read Sea of Storms, mm-hmm. which would be the third or mm-hmm. the first in the regular series. And again, just enhance it. And Elle, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong.
No, I think that's perfect. Yeah. From what I've heard, it's going to be season one will just be the short story collections. And then, the thing that makes me most excited is if they continue to tell the stories in the novels, they're going to have material for many, many seasons. That makes me so happy.
Right?
Now, one thing that neither of you brought up, and Elle, I'm curious your thoughts about it. I know this is, and I'm not a gamer, so, but I know this was a very successful video game series. But from what I do understand is that they're essentially based on the characters and the world of the books, but the games are a totally different thing. And I also know that the series is based on the books, not the games. Mm-hmm. And I've seen sort of warnings out there like, hey, gamers, don't freak out. It's really based more on the books, not on the game. So are you, did you play the games? Are you familiar with the games, Elle? What's your thoughts about that?
I am familiar with the games. I do not play personally, but I have many close friends who do. And I've sat with them as they played. I've watched a lot of the cutscenes. I kind of get I'm familiar with the gist of it. It does look like it's going to be pretty different, at least mm-hmm. based on the trailer and what we've heard. Definitely books based, but the aesthetic, I don't know, it's definitely going to be a mashup. Like the Geralt in his whole getup is very much based on the image from the game, but the personality and the his interaction with the other characters seems more book-like. So it seems like it's going to be a good mashup, but story-wise definitely more books. From what I understand, Henry Cavill is a huge, huge fan of the books, as well as the series. But he's probably going to be him. Hopefully, him and the writers have thrown in a lot of things that we'll recognize from the books. A little, hey.
Yeah. Do you know, Elle, do you know what year these books started being published?
That is a great question. I don't know that off the top of my head.
I think they were originally published in Poland.
Yes, I knew that.
In either the late 90s or early 2000s.
That's what I was going to say.
And then they They didn't come to America or to English speaking folks until much later when they were translated.
Wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it the game that started the English translation, or did the English translation come first?
That I don't know.
Yeah, the reason I bring that up, because you were talking about the visuals and the aesthetic, and it got me thinking about, I've seen these books advertised on, you know, Kindle sales and things like that. And the covers do look like what Henry Cavill looks like, mm-hmm. and what the you know, what the games look like. But I would be curious to see what the original Polish covers from the first printings looked like versus what they look like now, because, yeah, as you know, when a series becomes successful, they get reprinted later on, and the covers often change. And especially if there's going to be book or movie adaptations, then they'll often throw stills from the movies, mm-hmm. Or the TV series up there. I was thinking about that just the other day, because about midway through the new season of the Jack Ryan show, which I know Patrick is watching too, or probably finished by now. And I thought it was kind of hilarious, because now they're putting out all those Tom Clancy books with John Krasinski on the covers, which is kind of funny to me. I don't know why that strikes me as funny, but you know, those books have probably been reprinted a million times. So I was kind of wondering what the Witcher books looked like early on. I'll have to Google that later and see if the visuals kind of stayed consistent or have changed because of the games and subsequent things. So
that's a great point.
That's always kind of interesting.
I'm curious.
So you were talking about the Witcher books, and what other kinds of fantasy things? Because, you know, obviously you write in that genre. What other, if any, kind of fantasy series have you enjoyed, and which maybe possibly is an influence on you as a writer?
Oh boy. Let's see. Well, I do have to say, I've always been a fan since I was a child. My mom used to work right next to a library, and after school, when I was waiting for her to take me home, I would just hang out in the library for hours. And I've always been drawn to fantasy, science fiction, that kind of speculative fiction genres. So I had that fantasy section of the library memorized. But because I didn't have time to read a full novel when I was there after school, I always gravitated towards collections of myths and legends from around the world. So you could read it in half an hour, but still be a fully contained story with lots of mythical monsters and magic and the cool, like, foundational cultural stories from around the world. And I've always been drawn to those and love collecting those stories. And I wouldn't be able to pinpoint, like, this was a specific story from a specific book that started this love of fantastical creatures, but a lifetime of building on those has definitely developed that love, and has been very much reflected in the Hearthstone books, because their world is full of mythical creatures, and some of them I pulled right from the folktales from my childhood. I said, oh, that would be cool to see in battle against a dragon. So I do love those collections of stories.
You know, you brought up two of those things. Thank you for sharing that. It's I feel like a lot of authors have similar tales or similar bullet points in their history into developing as an author, because I read Neil Gaiman put out sort of a little memoir kind of a thing, and he talked about how when he was younger, his parents would essentially drop him off at the library, and he just stayed at the library all day as a kid.
Best babysitter ever.
Yeah, they would just, you know, sort of entrust the librarians to, because he would just sit in the corner and he basically read everything that his library had. You know, he made his way through the whole children's section and then worked his way up to fantasy and science fiction and what have you. And he did that. And so I don't know if you knew that about Neil Gaiman, that he had sort of a similar story to you.
I did not.
Yeah, well, there you go. Great minds, right? but also the other thing you brought up is the kind of mythical collections. I feel like many of the authors that we've had on over the years speak about picking up you know, like a book of Greek myths or something, and kind of reading through those over and over again. And I think these are kind of like foundational stories that if you do read in genre, that have an influence directly or not on what sort of came later, but these kind of myths and legends and heroes' journeys and what have you. So I feel like that's in the background of so many, if not all, fantasy authors in particular.
Yeah, so much so.
Patrick just sent me the covers to I'm assuming these are the original Polish covers, Patrick, that you just sent me here.
I believe they are, yes.
Yeah, they look like it. And it does look kind of like how, I mean, they're not up close photos of or illustrations of the character, but it does look pretty similar to what we see on sort of the Netflix show coming up. So I love.
Well, yeah. I mean, the description of Geralt is, you know, he's got long white hair.
Yeah.
And his eyes are different, mm-hmm. Because he's a magically induced mutant,
mm-hmm.
like all witchers. So mm-hmm. I think there's not that far for them to go.
Right. And now, Elle, I'm looking at these covers, and I have your book, Flamebringer, in my hands, and I'm looking at the cover there. How was that experience for you? Is seeing, you know, these covers on your books? Because I feel like, especially with fantasy, the covers are such a big part of it. I think so anyway, and it often is what draws me to choose certain books to read. So, what was that experience of seeing covers on your books and, you know, sort of characters and scenes from your books brought to life on the cover? How has that been for you?
It's been awesome and really quite surreal. I do love seeing how they all work together, and the repeated motifs, and the fact that it's the same model in Dragon Shadow and Flamebringer, books 2 and 3. I don't know for certain if it's the same model for the first book, because she's further away in the distance. But the dragons that are portrayed were exactly as I imagined. So seeing that come to life from somebody else's mind, purely based on the story that they had read, that was a wonderful day when I saw those proofs.
Do you have, I don't, most authors don't, but do you have any input into the covers?
For the initial creation, no. They send some just general, like, preference of color for fonts. There are several selections, and then I weigh in on that, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, it looks great, and I'm happy for you, and I'm glad to see that this comes. So this is the final book in the series. So not to get ahead of ourselves, but do you have other projects in the work that you can speak of, or is everything just kind of focused on getting the word out about Flamebringer?
I am working on a project with Harper Voyager that will be coming out next year. I can't say too much about it yet, but more details will be coming soon. I'm very excited for it. And I am also working on a series pitch, which is a very loosely reimagining of Hunchback of Notre Dame, which is one of my other favorite books, as a epic space opera. So that's very, very early stages, but that's on the back burner for me.
Do you go to cons? Or are you going to be going to any cons coming up?
I do occasionally. I'm planning to go to New York Comic Con next year. I just missed this year, and I'm so bummed about that. That's all I know for sure, but that might change. We'll see.
And if people want to follow you online, do you have a specific website, or are you active on Twitter? How can people kind of check out what you have going on online?
My author site is lcatherinewhite.com, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at l_k_writes. And if you want a sneak peek into the world of the Hearthstone books, DragonRidersOfArl.com is the book specific site. And I include some original sketches of the creatures. You can read excerpts from the books there, character profiles, a whole bunch of fun stuff, all lives there.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. Well, Elle, thank you so much for coming on the show today. For us, once again, everybody, thank you for listening. And want to thank our patrons for backing us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. If you'd like to become one of our backers, just go over there and you can pledge $1 a month or whatever works for you. And you can become part of that Facebook group for patrons only. And it's a lot of fun. So patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Nothing much except the book series sounds really cool. So is there an audiobook version?
There are, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to have to check that out because I do most of my reading via audiobook these days. So yeah, definitely. Very, very cool.
All right. Elle, thanks again for coming on the show. We'd love to have you back on when you have your next thing to promote.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, everybody. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.